Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, January 19th. I'm Ray Graff. We have a new president coming in tomorrow. We have a new Senate coming in. We have a pandemic that never seems to end that has bollocksed up finances all around the world. Today, we get some financial advice from two folks at BST, an accounting, tax, and financial services consulting firm, Judy Cahey and Bob Canterbury. If you have a question about finances, maybe some questions about the year ahead, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number, 800-348-2551. Judy and Bob and your finance calls coming up right after the news. Okay, we on? Oh, it's time for the show. It's a Vox Pop on WAMC. 20 minutes after 2 o'clock, we had some technical difficulties, but we are now back and ready to roll, theoretically. We'll get some financial advice today from BST, an accounting, tax, and financial services consulting firm. Judy Cahey has nearly 20 years of tax experience and extensive knowledge in the areas of individual, corporate, partnership, and estate and trust taxation. Judy has a bachelor's in accounting from Castleton State College and a master's from the University at Albany. Bob Canterbury is a senior wealth advisor at BST with 30 years of financial planning and wealth management experience, and it's great to have these two back on the program. Our number is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551, or you can email your questions, as people have already done, to voxpop@wamc.org. Judy Cahey, welcome back.
Thank you, Ray. Thank you for having me back.
Thank you for hanging in there while we dealt with some issues with the phones here. Bob Canterbury, welcome back. Happy New Year.
Good afternoon, Ray. Thanks for having me.
Judy, we'll start with you, and then we'll get to the phones and the emails here. You know, the last time you both were on, I think, was very early in the pandemic, and they were just starting to talk about PPP. And there are so many questions still about the PPP loans. What are the most common questions you're getting from your clients about this?
Right now, Ray, it's round two. So we just saw pretty significant legislation pass right at the end of December. And this opened up the ability for businesses to go back and qualify again for a second round of a PPP loan. So a lot of the questions I'm getting right now are in the context of that and what it takes.
You know, this can be for either of you, but let's talk about unemployment insurance. We have a new administration taking office tomorrow. How unemployment insurance might change, perhaps, is up in the air. What has changed so far, and how can people find out if they qualify for unemployment insurance?
Well, Ray, you're exactly right. There have been a lot of questions about unemployment and the extension of benefits. I think each person is going to be in a different situation, and they were most likely would need to log on to the New York State unemployment website to get up to the date current information. What I can tell our listeners is that the state rules are different than the federal rules. So for example, the maximum weekly amount you can qualify for with New York State is $504 a week. And of course, the federal government has decided to add to that $600 a week, and they're debating on how much more to add to that and how long to continue that unemployment benefit. So you kind of have two pieces to the puzzle, if you will, the federal part and the New York State part working together.
I mean, has it been tough, we'll throw this to Judy, for you guys to keep up with all the changes since March of 2020 when everything went south?
Oh, exactly, Ray. You know, we're gearing up here for tax season, and the IRS is just kicking off, and we're not even able to file until February 12th because they're still adapting to some of the changes that came about from this act, you know, again, the end of December being passed. So lots of changes and lots to keep up on.
All right, we'll do three emails here, and then we'll jump to the phones. We're keeping things a little bit compressed here as we're a little short of time. The number is 800-348-2551 if you have a question for Bob Canterbury and Judy Cahey today. This email came in from Cheryl, and Cheryl says, will charitable donations be deductible for the 2020 tax year? Bob, I think we lost Judy temporarily, so why don't you take this one?
Yes, the charitable deductions, there is a special rule that will allow a certain dollar amount of charitable deductions that's over and above the standard deduction. So some folks may remember that under the Trump administration, they increased the standard deduction quite significantly. So for example, if you're married filing a joint return, your standard deduction is $24,000.
Yep.
And previously, you weren't able to deduct charitable contributions. It was the greater of the two. But now, Ray, they are allowing the standard deduction plus a limited amount of charitable deductions are going to be allowed on top of that as well.
This email from Steve, and Steve writes, is there, and I think we have Judy back, so welcome back to the show, Judy. Is there an age you could start advising your clients to stop contributing to their IRAs? I'm 60 years old and will most likely keep working for another 5 years, and that's from Steve.
Well, the eligibility, there are different types of IRAs, right? So there's a traditional IRA, there's a Roth IRA, and the eligibility generally depends on your earned income. So if you're not working, you're not eligible to contribute. But if you are, I think there's always a benefit to contributing to the IRA, whether or not that contribution itself is deductible. Again, depends on your level of income, but to the extent you can contribute, the IRS does have a limit. The annual limit is $6,000 per year, and that can be in addition to, let's say, a 401k contribution. A lot of people didn't realize that you are eligible in some cases to do both.
We are joined today by Judy Cahey and Bob Canterbury of BST, an accounting, tax, and financial services consulting firm, and we'll get to the calls momentarily. One more email here. By the way, there are a couple of open lines, 800-348-2551. As long as the phones don't crash, we're good to go. This one is from Jack in Albany. Jack says, now that more than a dozen states have legalized adult recreational marijuana, and New York and others in the near future, can you please comment about investing in cannabis stocks? And that's from Jack in Albany.
Well, that's a good question. One of the things that has come up quite often with my clients and calls that I receive has a lot to do with which sectors or which stocks are positioned to have a very big year in 2021, especially under the new presidency. And it might be helpful to maybe share a list of what I think sectors or particular stocks that might be winners this year, such as video games, PCs and tablets, broadband services, home improvement spending, eating at home, streaming video services, telemedicine, home exercise equipment, pet care products and services, even online gambling sites, and as just mentioned, cannabis stocks are all positioned to have a big year in 2021. Conversely, Ray, there are some sectors, of course, that have been hit hard, like dental and hospitals with elective surgeries, theme parks, dining out. So many mutual funds, if you invest in mutual funds, let's say in your 401k, will generally take that into account, right? If you're picking stocks yourself, maybe you have a separate side account that you like to play around with, then you could keep that in mind. Cannabis stocks, online gambling stocks, those things that I just mentioned might be poised to have a good year in 2021.
Let's go to the phones. Judy Cahey is here and Bob Canterbury from BST, an accounting, tax, and financial services consulting firm. The number is 800-348-2551. Rick in Pittsfield has been waiting since before the phones crashed. Hello, Rick. You're on.
How are you? I have a two-part question. First is for me. I file my taxes every year. I'm on limited disability income. But for 2018, I had a large insurance settlement due to my sickness. I have yet to file my 2019 taxes. I'm about to file by 2020. I never got any stimulus checks at all. And I'm assuming because of the large income in 2018. So is there a possibility of still getting retroactively. And my second question is, my son also hasn't filed 2019 yet. He had income in 2018 in California that he worked for a couple months. He worked as an independent coder. He's in college. And part of his income while he was a coder was sent to his dorm in New York State. And he had income in Massachusetts. And when he put it all together, he thought that he would be best to file for unemployment in Massachusetts, which is his residency, as opposed to California or New York. But we have never done that. So can he retroactively file for unemployment at this late game?
That's a long question. You got your money's worth, Rick. All right. Who wants this one?
Okay. I'll start with part one here. So the payments that went out, there were two rounds of payments. We saw the first act, you know, there were payments of, you know, depending on whether you were single or married, filing joint back in the spring. And when we had the legislation pass in December, there was another round. And you're right, there was a threshold of $150,000 on a married filing joint return. They were based upon a 2019 tax filing. And if you're, you know, depending on that 2019 return, that's what they were based on. But that being said, Rick, they were an advanced payment of a credit that could be claimed on your 2020 tax return. So that credit is called a recovery rebate credit, and to the extent that you were eligible for it and did not get it by virtue of receipts from the IRS in the mail, then you will claim that credit on your 2020 income tax return. But I'd also tell you that there is a place to check on the www.irs.gov. There's a Get My Payment tool on there to sort of see, but they did base that upon a 2019 tax filing, and that could look different in 2020 for a variety of reasons, you know, depending on income and so forth. So,
okay.
The second part of the question regarding unemployment, there was a lot of pieces there.
Yes. So, do you need a recap, or can you remember?
Well, I think
he had income.
Go ahead, Rick.
He had income in California, and he had freelance income as a programmer, which was the W-2 was sent to his dorm, and the work stopped when COVID hit, but he also had income in Massachusetts, and so he was going to file for the unemployment in Massachusetts because the aggregate was enough to meet the Massachusetts threshold.
Judy.
And he was a resident of Massachusetts?
He is a resident of Massachusetts, yes.
Great. So, you know, I'm not sure I'm well versed to comment on this. I know obviously when the rules changed back in March and we saw the unemployment rules, the CARES Act came out and they said, okay, if you're self-employed, you can qualify for unemployment at a federal level. That was a new concept. My instinct tells me it's where you're a resident of. So if he was in California temporarily, you know, while in school. I'm not quite sure. I'm not sure if Bob could add to what I'm saying.
Bob.
No, I think there are too many variables there as far as resident, non-resident income and how that would apply. So we might need to take that one offline, I think.
Okay, Rick, thanks a lot, and we appreciate you waiting. The number is 800-348-2551. It's Vox Pop. Financial advice today from Bob Canterbury and Judy Cahey. Mary is in Vermont. Hello, Mary.
Yes, hello. Thank you for taking my call. My call is whether or not the stimulus check money is taxable. Is that income on your taxes?
It is not income on your taxes. That's good news.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Appreciate it.
That question comes up again and again, and we appreciate that one. Thank you, Mary. We go to Joe in New Hartford. Joe, you're on.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm over in the Utica area, and I am privileged to sit on the board of a couple of modestly small not-for-profits. And just to give you an idea of the size of them, they each have an annual budget of about $250,000, and they have endowments of about $1 million each. And my question is what is best practice in terms of how frequently or if these organizations should get a formal audit?
Well, New York State, with, you know, on a for a New York State charity, there's a Char 500 filing on an annual basis, and that dictates typically the level of financial statement you have and your gross receipts, whether or not you need a reviewed financial or not. So just trying to grab that guidance, but there's requirements on a degree of gross receipts and whether or not you need a statement prepared.
Okay. And assuming that we do need statements prepared, that my understanding is that can be done as either a review or a formal audit?
Yeah, I'm just trying to grab the rules for you. But it's dictated in the statute to the Char 500 instructions whether you need an audit or a reviewed statement.
Okay. And I guess the add-on question is if we do need an audit, a formal audit, how much should that cost?
It depends on, you know, an audit is a more comprehensive financial statement than a review. It gets into testing in other areas. So in terms of financial statement process, that is the most. And actually, while I'm talking to you, I'm just finding that I believe that the requirement for a audit to be needed by a charity is $500,000 of gross receipts.
Okay.
All right.
So it sounds like you're not quite at that level.
Okay. Joe, thanks a lot for the call. We go now to Evan in Poughkeepsie. Evan, you're on.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, everyone. So this is my question. I am married filing separately, and I was talking with my investment guy about making a large contribution to my Roth IRA. I want to put like 20 to 25 grand in. And he's like, whoa. You can't, because you are married filing separately. You can only put $1,200 or $1,500, something tiny, in it. I need confirmation of this because I might have to divorce my husband.
Well, Bob, you go ahead. But in general, the maximum you can contribute to a Roth for 2020 is $6,000. So I'm not quite sure, unless you're over the age of 50. So I'm not quite sure the number that you
I'm
have.
Over 50. Yeah, I'm over 50.
Yeah, I would also clarify that it sounded like you were mentioning the Roth 401k feature, right? Which, if I'm over 50, I can actually contribute up to $26,000 in a 401k on a Roth basis. But if you're talking about a Roth IRA that's separate, that's the $6,000 limit that Judy was referring to.
Okay. So are any of these impacted by the fact that I'm married filing separately?
No. Because those, an IRA or a 401k would be in your name only. So your marital status doesn't dictate how much you're able to contribute on your own.
Okay, that's very different from what he said. So whether I do add $20,000 to my 401k rollover that I've turned into a Roth, and I paid the taxes on it, so it's now a Roth, or I start a separate IRA and put $6,000 in, being married filing separately does not limit those contributions. That's what you're saying.
Well, that situation you just clarified is a little different than I thought we were talking about 401k. Uh-huh. So if you are talking about an IRA rollover, then you are correct that your marital status on your tax return, your AGI, dictates how much you could contribute to a Roth IRA. So I was mentioning that it was $6,000 per year earlier, but that starts to be phased out as your income level exceeds certain thresholds. So it sounds like if you look at your combined income, that might be limiting what you can contribute to a Roth IRA.
All right, Evan, thanks a lot. We got to take a break here. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. 800-348-2551 is the number. We talk finances today with the folks from BST. We'll be right back. ¶¶ Vox Pop on WAMC, 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. It is Finances Today with Judy Cahey and Bob Catterbury from BST. And two emails here, folks, and then we'll get back to the phones for the home stretch. This one is from Barbara. Barbara says, with four sisters as partners in an S-Corp, there's a 50-50 split in sale price of family property. One half is digging in feet with unreasonable demands on pricing. Is there anything the other half can do to sell at a reasonable price being offered? Well, that sounds like fun.
Okay, so there's a little bit going on here. So as corporation, four family members, you know, typically the you know, S corporation is owned by stock pro rata out to family members based upon ownership. So I don't know if they're equally splitting or not. But then part two was they have a piece of property they're going to sell.
Yeah, that looks like it. They're four sisters. They're partners. It's a 50-50 split in the sale price of family property.
So we got a couple different phrases going on there, right? Usually with S Corp, you go out based upon ownership. You have to share in the interest, the distributions pro rata. Partners are a different concept. That's partnership, but that's not what she's saying.
Right.
You know, anytime you're involved in a transaction like this, you want to look to, you know, fair value. You get appraisals involved. I don't think I'm getting quite enough of the facts to help with the question.
And I don't think that there's enough here. And frankly, this would be the time when you say, you know, maybe you should consult a financial professional. I think that's how we'll answer that one. Let's go to another email. This one from Michael in Key West, of all places. Michael writes, last year, the limit for tax deductions was $10,000. Is that true this year? And if so, the standard deduction would be better if you paid more than that in state and local taxes?
So the standard deduction, if you're married, filing joint now, is $24,800. And what he's referring to, you know, back at the end of 2017, we had a pretty major tax bill passed. And part of that was a $10,000 limitation on the state and local piece of your itemized deduction. So, for example, if you pay, you know, $20,000 in both your property tax and your income tax, you're going to be capped at a $10,000 component to that when you itemize. So what that law did, ultimately, it means a lot more taxpayers are claiming the standard deduction because it's $24,800. About 86% of the population now claims a standard deduction.
Right. Okay. Well, let's go back to the phones. 800-348-2551 is the number. Deanne in West Sand Lake, you're on.
Thank you for taking my call.
I
have a question about taxes. I used to do my taxes myself on paper, and the last few years I went, AARP did it at our library for free, and so I went to them. Now, they're not doing it at a library this year, so I'm wondering, can I return to doing a paper one? I thought somewhere I've read that you have to, if you do it online one year, you have to keep it online. And I have one other question.
Yeah, sure. I know that it's becoming more and more difficult to file on paper, and there's also places, you know, like free tax file if your income is below a certain number to file online. But I can't honestly answer that. I don't think you can still file on paper anymore.
Okay.
Nor do you want
to. Okay,
you know, the IRS right now is extremely dysfunctional. So you can file something, you know, there are very limited kinds of forms that have to go in on paper. And I know that their processing is extremely slow right now. They're extremely behind in terms of processing checks as well as processing things that do need to be filed. So electronic is a little bit safer and a little bit faster.
All right, part two.
Okay, well, the thing is, that's what I wanted to know. My income is low. I mean, it's like $25,000 is my income. So I'm just wondering if there's a place, there's someone who will do it for me online or who will do it for me, but they won't charge. Do you know of any place like that?
You know, I am not quite sure. I know, like I said, I know that there's, you know, the IRS.gov, there's a section on there that says file your taxes online for free. And there's, you know, I'd go to certainly websites that are reputable, like the IRS.gov, to look for if your income, you know, is below, I believe it's $72,000, to be able to file free. And again, they have a list of potential services on their website that, that could help you with that.
Okay. IRS.gov. Thank you very much. Did you want to add something to that, Judy?
No.
Okay. Let's go to Saugerties, New York. And David, you're on.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm curious if whether you have any information regarding the PPP loan or any other incentives through the COVID menagerie that we are experiencing for new businesses. I started a brand new business in January of 2020, which seems to be disqualifying me from anything because you have to have a track record of at least 2019. And show that you have a decrease in income of at least 25%. Do you know anything about this?
There, in PPP round two, there was a new, there's a provision for new businesses in there that you had to be in existence on a certain date. And I'm pretty sure that rule is more lenient, that, that you were excluded on PPP round one, but the second round that just came about at the end of December, unfortunately I can't spit out that rule.
Okay. All right.
But I
round
do
two.
Think
thanks for
that. I do think that they I know they changed the rule, and I know that if your date, if your business was in place at a certain date in 2020, that you can qualify.
This email came in from Laura, and Laura says, my father died at the end of 2020, leaving whole life insurance policies. I'm the beneficiary and live in New York State. Are the proceeds that I receive taxable? Also, what is the threshold for filing New York State and federal estate tax returns?
Insurance proceeds are tax-free, income tax-free. So whether it was a whole life or term policy really doesn't matter. If she was the beneficiary, then those proceeds would be income tax-free. What she may have been alluding to is that the decedent, when you look at whether or not they owe estate taxes, then there's a separate filing for estate taxes. And typically, if the estate is small enough, there may not be any estate taxes either.
Okay.
Yeah, usually 1099, you know, usually beneficiary designation, Ray, the 1099 goes out to that, and that's how that works.
Okay, let's go back to the phones. Our number is 800-348-2551. Judy Cahey and Bob Canterbury here from BST. Marie is in South Hadley. Hi, Marie, you're on.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. I am referring to my 2019 tax return I filed jointly with my husband on a few occasions when my son has not been employed. We have included him as a dependent, as we have provided for him. And so we got our a letter from the IRS recently that said basically that somebody else filed for my son, filed taxes for my son, and that we owed money. And so, Mike, we believe that that was fraudulent. My son did not file his taxes for 2019, and he has had one or two other events that would make you think that his identity has been stolen. So I have tried calling the IRS on multiple occasions at different times, different days. You can't get through to them. And I was just wondering if you could tell me how we can proceed. I mean, when you said that the IRS is dysfunctional, I laughed out loud because I did get through. They have a 7-minute time limit that if they don't pick up the call again while they're doing your research within 7 minutes, that your call is automatically disconnected because you kept saying 7 minutes, 7 minutes, 7 minutes. I got disconnected when I was hoping we were going to resolve this, and now I just can't get through.
Yikes.
So I'm going to hang up and listen. If you could tell me how to proceed, I would appreciate it.
Thanks, Marie. We'll try.
Sure. I have two tips for you, Marie. Number one, call the IRS early in the morning when they open up the phone lines because you have a higher success rate of getting through. And then number two, what you need to take a look at is go to the IRS.gov and grab the form 14039. That's 14039, identity theft affidavit, and complete that for your son, particularly in the instance where you believe that somebody's had access to your Social Security number, that something's not right on your filing.
Okay.
It's not unusual for, unfortunately, identity theft these days, where you try to go file a return and you get a notification that a return has been filed in that Social Security number already. But you need to make the IRS aware, and the best way to do that is to file that one-page form with them. Right. And go on record. And also your son can get a PIN number so that going forward that PIN number would be needed to file, and that way somebody else couldn't file without that information in his number.
Bob Canterbury, do you want to add anything to that?
No, I think Judy covered it. It sounds like an identity theft type situation, which can be a little frustrating if they don't have all the details.
All right, remember the email where we didn't have quite enough information from Barbara, who had four sisters in an S-Corp and
yes.
a 50-50 split?
Yes.
She followed up with another email. So here we go. This is a clarification. And Barbara writes, the four sisters each have an equal share in the S-Corp and property.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, two sisters want to sell at a fair price being offered by a buyer now, and the other two are holding out for an unreasonable amount. Is there any way to settle this? We are tired of paying taxes. It's a very something parcel. There's some descriptive word left out. It's a very parcel with only a certain type of buyer being interested. This is the first offer we've received in 2.5 years, and that, again, is from Barbara.
Okay, Barbara, that is an attorney question. So
okay.
What happens is you have an S-Corp, you have four sisters. It sounds like two people want us to sell the land that's owned by the S-Corp, two people don't. That's controlled by state law. That's your bylaws. That's in terms of, you know, who your officers are, who can make decisions, what percentage of the vote. It sounds like there's equal vote here potentially with four. But that really gets into a legal question in terms of what rights you have to either force or not force a sale to a third party.
Fair enough. We go to Washingtonville. Marcus, you're on. Hello, Marcus. Are you there? Oh, Marcus. Marcus waited a while, and now Marcus is gone. We go to Joe in Albany. Joe, you're on.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Quick question. My partner and I, we've been together since 2004, and he hasn't worked in the past 2 years, so he has no taxes to claim for 2020, and I was wondering if I can claim him on my taxes.
Potentially. There's an ability to claim a household member if their income, I believe, is below $4,000. Potentially, I think the answer is yes, but you have to check on that rule on dependent and the level of income.
All right, Joe, thanks a lot. Quickly to Teresa in Albany. Teresa.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. So through my employer, I purchase and pay the premiums on an accident insurance policy, and then last year I had an injury, and so I got a payout from that policy. Is that income taxable?
Bob?
It's like I'm not sure. So you have like a, was it a payout on disability or was it a payout like an Aflac, like an accident insurance?
Yes, it's an accident insurance. It's like Aflac. It's not that company, but it's like that. Yeah.
So I don't believe so. I think if they're reimbursing you like for your various health insurance you had for your injury, that wouldn't be something that's subject to taxable income, I don't believe.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much.
Teresa,
you're
thank
welcome.
You very much. Only a couple of minutes left here with Bob Canterbury and Judy Cahey from BSD. We go now to Schenectady. Robin, you're on.
Hi, I heard that poor caller about paper filing. I actually still paper file because as an older person trying to read
all of the information online on the computer is very difficult. And I was going to also ask or suggest that I tried looking at e-filing, and if you have more than one form, we're talking hundreds of dollars. It's not that simple. I actually went out and bought a printer yesterday, but it means now that people have to have a computer, they have to have internet service, and the ability to download things so that you can still get forms, you can still paper file. I'd be interested to hear, because when I last checked, unless it's a simple 1040, it's hundreds of dollars. So if the guests have any ideas about free e-filing, it doesn't matter if you're making under 75 or 70,000.
I'm not sure about that. Judy.
So here's just a couple of thoughts. One is, like I said, I literally had a client file a paper thing that had to be filed in June that just got scanned by the IRS in December. It took 6 months for them to even scan a paper filing of a particular return that had to go in on paper because it was a specific thing. Obviously, as a professional, we have certain tax software we're using. We're mandated to e-file. We're subject to certain rules. And as I say, the IRS.gov, they do advertise free filing. In terms of certain providers with 72,000, I'm not quite sure how that works. Again, a little bit, because I used CPA tax software. I'm just not quite sure how that works from a user standpoint.
We did get an email from Kelly a few moments ago who wrote, please let the caller who asked about free filing contact her local United Way in Berkshire County, Massachusetts. They can connect people to agencies which may be able to prepare taxes for free under a certain income level. And that one was from Kelly. I don't know if we have enough time to take another call here. We only have about 20 seconds. Bob, give us a quick tip for investing in 10 seconds for 2021.
Well, I would encourage everyone to take a look at their 401k plan. If you're employed and you're lucky enough to have savings, it's important to monitor your investment allocation and know what kind of choices you have. This is a perfect time to maybe make adjustments. As we know, the first quarter of last year was a little bit rough, and fortunately, most people did recover. But if you're not tolerant of such levels of risk, I think it's definitely worthwhile looking at your investment choices and reallocating based on your risk tolerance.
Well, Bob Canterbury and Judy Cahey of BST Financial, thank you both so much for being here, and we'll talk to you again soon, okay?
Thanks very much, Ray.
Support comes from Empire Exhibits and Displays, providing design, production, and project management services for museums, events, and commercial interiors, featuring acrylic barriers, dividers, and custom safety options, empireexhibits.com. And the Center for Disability Services, thanking their staff who are working to help people with their life skills during these challenging times. CFDSNY.org/careers for information about helping others. Once again, thanks to Judy and Bob for being here. Thank you for listening. Thank you for calling. Sorry if we didn't get to your call. Those two will be back again soon. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Carl Blackwood took the calls. Our producer's Jackie Orchard. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, we will change up things. It was supposed to be Pets and Vets, but we're going to do an inauguration special with Alan Shartok and your calls and your thoughts on the incoming Biden administration. That's tomorrow at 2. Right now, stand by for the book show.